Today is Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. NPR is accused of censoring opinions, and then they respond by censoring opinion. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating. You can email us, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. Joining me now to get through the news of the cray, as we do each and every weekday morning, bright and early, Billy Hallowell, Trey Gons-Phillips. A lot to get to, as always. On the Focus story, some Christian actors are sharing some heartbreaking news.
Yeah, Carlos and Alexa Penavega, they had a really tragic loss with their baby they were expecting, so we'll get into that story today.
All right, and looking ahead to the main thing, Trey, you caught up with Broadway star Laura Osnes.
Yeah, I talked to her about a new movie she has, but also about her faith and how she uses prayer and preparing for roles and how she sees Hollywood as a mission field. It was a good conversation.
All right, that's coming up on the main thing. Looking forward to that. Don't forget to subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts. You can subscribe to DC Debrief with John Stolness. He rounds up everything going on the week in DC. And Newsmakers with Billy. That's a full-length interview once each and every weekday. So make sure you check those out. Greatly appreciate that. All right. Time to head on over to the news now in 90 seconds. Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg filed a motion yesterday to hold former President Trump in contempt of court. He's claiming he violated a gag order by publishing three social media posts relating to some of the witnesses in his criminal trial here, Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen. Bragg wants the Manhattan judge, Juan Merchant, to warn Trump that future violations of the gag order can be punished, not only with additional fines, but also with a term of incarceration of up to 30 days. And jury selection is still ongoing in this trial. NPR has suspended Yuri Berliner, the senior editor who published a bombshell essay a week ago that claimed that the publicly funded outlet has lost America's trust by approaching news stories with a clear bias towards the left. And NPR media writer David Folkenflik revealed yesterday that Berliner, beginning on Friday, was suspended for 5 days without pay. NPR called the letter a final warning that they sent to him, saying Berliner would be fired if he violated NPR's policy again. And CBN News chief political analyst David Brody sat down with Texas Governor Greg Abbott for an exclusive interview talking about the border crisis that has racked his state as millions of migrants have illegally crossed into the U.S. from Mexico. Those are just some of today's top headlines. You can check out more stories over at cbnnews.com. And before we go further and react to today's news, guys, I wanted to give a quick update on the Mark Driscoll situation that we did talk about on the podcast yesterday at length. He actually took the stage again at this same conference, and they had some more things to say.
Yeah, it's interesting. It looks like the two men, so Mark Driscoll and then John Lindell, the pastor of James River, which is the church that organized this entire Stronger Men's Conference, they sat down together on stage, and Lindell talked about their relationship. He said, we were able to speak privately, and he said, we reaffirmed our friendship with one another. And then Mark actually apologized and said, you're the spiritual authority here. I should have recognized that. He didn't apologize for the words that he said, but he said, I should have handled it differently. The order should have been different. I should have talked to you privately and then addressed this issue publicly had you given me the opportunity to do so. So he stands by his words, Driscoll does, but he said, he apologized for how he handled it. And then Lindell, to his credit, invited Driscoll back to the stage and said, we'd actually like for you to deliver the sermon that you planned to deliver, which was about Elijah. So he invited him back to the stage, and he was able to move forward as planned with his remarks. So it seems to be a good ending to the situation.
Yeah, depends on where you are on it. I have different thoughts.
Well, do tell, Billy. I mean, you can't just throw that out there and then let it...
I think it's nice that they got along in the end. That's great. We don't want to see people being in tension, but you know, if what Driscoll was saying is true, I'm giving what ifs here. If what Driscoll was saying was is true, and this was really terrible and wrong, the offense wasn't against the other pastor. The offense was against God, potentially. So I don't even know that this idea that this is some sort of two Christians arguing and that, you know, he should have approached him first is necessarily true. I mean, if you really see something happening that you think is a violation of what is right and true at a men's conference and you speak up, the irony is he was preaching on Elijah, who was, you know, despite his own fears, pretty bold in speaking out against, you know, Jezebel. So I don't know. I think some of the arguments being made about why he should have approached him are not necessarily accurate.
Well,
the timing of it, though, was the issue, because there was a whole day apparently in between and he was with him for 30 minutes. Like, why wouldn't you bring it up there? And that's sort of what he's saying. I think if he would have saw that performance minutes before he went on stage, he would have been 100% in the right on that. And in his comments and the timing of it, right? I don't think anyone's disagreeing with his assessment of the situation. Like, I don't even know. We only saw a portion of the clip of them back on stage again, so I don't know if they addressed it further as to what, you know, if the pastor felt bad about this or they just disagree on it. So, yeah, the timing of, he had all that time, that is sort of where I think the gripe lies.
And I also, the impression that I got in the short clip that has been posted, because obviously this was a private event, is a ticketed event. It's not just streaming online for everybody to watch. So we're kind of at the mercy of whatever clips end up online. And in the brief clip that did end up online, it didn't seem like Driscoll was apologizing for his words. And he wasn't even saying, I'm apologizing because this is a sin issue. He said, I'm apologizing because I respect you as a spiritual authority. I respect you as a pastor. And it just would have been more appropriate as someone who respects you for me to say, hey, I'm going to give you a heads up. This is something that I feel called to talk about, and then address it, right? He was apologizing for the sequence of events rather than the events themselves, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I think the only apology should be for what happened at the event itself, but call me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear
I
you
agree
with
what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, I know you do. I'm just saying, I don't know. I also feel like we don't have every single detail, but yeah, it could be that he was afraid. There are multiple factors. He could have been sitting on it and waiting. I've also seen the perspective that this was some sort of, some people have said, oh, Driscoll was just trying to get attention, right? Now, I'm not saying that's true either, but these are the things out there. I think the entire thing is fascinating. You know, and I think the focus needs to be on how in the world was this included at a men's conference?
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, it is interesting. I see what you're saying, Bill. Yeah, the focus to be on this part of the dispute rather than on, hey, wait a minute, what are these shenanigans you thought was appropriate for a men's conference is kind of, seems a little backwards for sure. So, all right, well, we'll talk. We kind of used our time. I didn't think we were going to go that far on Driscoll. But Billy was calling down fire from heaven onto the altar. So we will catch up more on the NPR update, because that is a remarkable in and of itself that they went and suspended this guy, Berliner, after they were accused of censoring opposing opinions, and then they go ahead and suspend this guy. Really remarkable and a bit disturbing for sure. We don't have time to get into reacting to that today, but perhaps we'll do it on a later episode this week on the podcast. We are going to head now over to the Focus story, and two actors that we mentioned at the top have released tragic news about their baby. So what's the story here?
Yeah, this is heartbreaking. Alexa and Carlos Penavega, they revealed that their baby daughter, Indy, was stillborn. And, you know, they put out a joint statement on social media. They had been expecting their fourth child. They announced it back in November. And these two are really interesting. They're both very strong Christians. They speak out quite frequently and fervently about their faith and have increasingly done so. And so this statement really expressed a deep reliance on God amid, you know, what they're facing, which is unimaginable. They've got three other kids, a 7-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 2-year-old. And they opened up their statement by saying that there's never the right words to say when it comes to loss. They described having this beautiful and peaceful delivery. And then they said, our daughter Indy was born at rest. That's how they worded it. They said, it's been a painful journey, but in the pain, we have found peace. God continues to comfort and hold us in his arms. So, you know, just, it's an incredibly heartbreaking situation, especially for anybody. And then when you're a public figure, you've announced this pregnancy, people are waiting for that to happen. And it's just this added layer, you know, of having to publicly address it, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And they alluded a little bit to their faith there. Did they elaborate on sort of how God's sustaining them in this time?
Yeah, you know, they talked about prayer from the community that they're in. And I believe they had recently moved. I don't know if they're down in Tennessee now, but they had moved to a new community, and the people around them sustaining them through prayer that, you know, despite facing all of this, they said, you know, grief comes to us in waves, moments of feeling absolutely gutted, then moments of feeling blessed by just getting a moment with her. And they talked, you know, they talked quite a bit about God, obviously sustaining them as well in the prayers of others. You know, they, one of the things that was really sort of heartbreaking and moving was the way they talked about their baby Indy and how she's already changed their lives and the lives of so many others. And they said, "We love you and can't wait to see how many other lives you change." That was just a moving statement for this baby that they never really got to meet.
Obviously, they're well known, being in the public eye. Are a lot of other people, I would assume, responding in and weighing in with words of encouragement?
Yeah, a lot of you know, celebrities posting on Instagram on their joint statement. One of them was Danica McKellar from the Wonder Years. She said, "Oh my goodness, I will hold all of you close in my prayers. I cannot imagine, but I know only God can bring the peace you seek." Also, Candace Cameron Bure commenting, "We love you. We love baby Indy. We are praying for you and Los and the kids and the day you all reunite. With all of our hearts, we are here for you." And I thought that message was particularly touching, you know, really pointing to heaven, reuniting, being together again in the future. And so lots of comments like that being sent to them.
Yeah. And it's really, it's a tough situation. And unfortunately, a lot of couples have gone through miscarriages, and obviously less common are these ones that happen later in the pregnancy. And tragic all the way around. And it's unfortunate, like I said, something that a lot of people have dealt with. Probably many of you in the audience have experienced a similar outcome. And, you know, it's interesting because it's been this thing in culture for a while, guys, to, well, we don't want to announce we're pregnant just yet in case something goes wrong. I kind of adhered to that in the first couple pregnancies with my wife and I, just because that's what you did. But then the more I thought about it, I thought, well, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, because if something were to happen, like, I'd want other believers to know that we're going through this so that we're not just hiding on it and just like keeping it to ourselves. Like, you want people to pray with you and to comfort you when something like this happens. So that's a side point. I never really, you know, it took me a while, but then I kind of came to have a different opinion on that whole thing. But obviously prayers for everyone involved here.
Yeah. Well, I would just say, you know, on that, you know, we went through a miscarriage and we were in that camp of never tell anybody. And, you know, we did that after the miscarriage, you know, before we had our first kid. It happened before we had any kids, you know, and we just didn't want to tell people because we didn't want to be reminded over and over again or be asked about it. But looking back on it, I actually agree with you. I think it would have been better to have more people praying for you, more people supporting you, more people really on again, that prayer front, being there. So I would probably handle it differently now than I did back then.
Yeah, I think stories like this, obviously it's such a tragic way to come about this or to have this realization, but it just reminds me, one, of life is fragile, but two, you know, all life from the moment of conception to the moment of natural death is, we're created in the image of God and we're valued by the Lord and we have an intended purpose. There's a plan. There's sovereign. The Lord is sovereign over it. So, you know, we're all children of God, those who have chosen to follow after him, and we should value all human life as a potential child of God. So these stories are just good reminders of that, that we're all image bearers of the Lord.
Well, and it's evidence too, from the fact that this is a life in the womb. When we all know how we respond when it does, when this happens, right? Whether it's early on in the pregnancy or later in the pregnancy, you're sad, you're grieving,
right?
Because you know what happened. And so, you know, when you look at the abortion debate going on, and it's like they want to pretend that that's not a human in there. Well, why do people react the way they do when A, you just get pregnant in the first place, you celebrate it, and then B, when something goes wrong with the pregnancy, you grieve it. It's kind of a kind of gives away the answer here as to what's going inside the womb.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of a video I was watching earlier this week. It was it's like a man on the street type video, and they're talking about, oh, if a woman is pregnant and she's killed, and the baby, of course, dies, unborn baby dies, should they be charged with double homicide? And everybody, person after person, says yes. Mm-hmm. And then he flipped the script and said, well, what then if this woman chooses to have an abortion 4 months in, 5 months into her pregnancy? Well, that's okay, because she's choosing to. It's like, he said, why is it true if the woman chooses to kill the child, but if a man kills this woman and both die, it's double homicide? Just to your point, Dan, I think it just is a good reminder that we all know the truth, that's a human life created in God's image.
Indeed. Indeed it is. All right. Appreciate you bringing that one to our radar today, Billy. Certainly going to add them to our prayer list for sure. But right now, we're going to head on over to the main thing. And Laura Osnes has a career in Broadway. She's in the recording studio now in Hollywood, and she caught up with Trey to talk about her latest movie, Just in Time, which just released on Great American Pure Flix, and how, as a Christian, she prioritizes prayer in her work, and why she believes Hollywood is the mission field God has called her to. That's today's main thing.
Laura Osnes, thank you so much for being here to talk with us. How are you today?
Hi, Trey. I'm so good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you about your new movie, Just in Time, for Great American. So for people who haven't seen the movie yet, tell us a little bit about the story and the character you play, Hannah. Ooh.
Yes, I play Hannah, and she and her husband, Rowan, are kind of at a breaking point in their marriage. They've been struggling with fertility, and of all things, the weekend of Easter, Rowan says, I need to go be with my family for the weekend. I think we need a little break, because that's caused a lot of stress in their marriage. And so Hannah is left to kind of go through this weekend of self-discovery through a series of kind of mysterious and unlikely events. She learns a lot of valuable lessons, and we can go into a little bit more of the plot, but ends up learning these things that will help redeem and restore hope in her marriage, which is really beautiful. There's a lot of redemptive messages in the movie.
Yeah, you know, I think redemption is something that we so desperately need in our culture we live. I know we talk about this all the time, but people kind of roll their eyes when they hear this, but we do live in a cancel culture, a culture that is not really willing to forgive or entertain the idea of redemption. So it's encouraging when you see movies that have these themes in them. Is that something that, as an actor, you're drawn to, is movies that have those redemptive storylines in them?
100%. Like, yes. I love getting to be able to put art out into the world that is going to inspire someone, that's going to challenge someone. And entertaining someone is wonderful as well, and there's a place for that. But I want someone to be moved by what they've seen. I want someone to be inspired or changed, even if it starts or sparks a conversation or growth. I do. I think that's lovely. It gives meaning and purpose to what I do as an actor, as an artist, and as a storyteller. And in that way, it's like, not only is it bringing me joy and I'm getting to share my gifts and do what I love, but like, other people can be affected by it. Like, that's icing on the cake, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of these storylines, we're entertained and we don't realize it, but it is actually impacting us, which, when it's impacting us for good, that's great. I want to ask you too, as an actor in preparing for roles, especially roles where your character is in a marriage that's having you're going through a rocky season, your character is going through a rocky season in her marriage, dealing with infertility, like, how do you navigate those things as an actor? Are there things that you draw on in your own life, in your own marriage?
For me, I have found that a lot of life experience is brought to the table in my performances. As you get older, you experience more things, great things, wonderful things, joyful things, and also hard things, really difficult things, blocking things that block you in your life, things that disappoint you. And all of those things make you a richer, more complex human being. And as a result, a richer, more complex actor, I have found. And so, yeah, preparing for something like this, it was different than most roles I've played. In a lot of these movies, it's two people falling in love at Christmas, and it's really sweet, and you're not having to really dive into much emotion. And there's a place for that, and that's wonderful. I love getting to make those joyful movies. But with this one, like, I literally, like, the scene work, I was going through writing notes in my script about what experience or thought I wanted to bring into those scenes. Things that have been hurtful to me in the past, things that have been hard, things I've had to overcome, as well as maybe, you know, bringing Hannah's story into it as well, and marrying kind of my truth with Hannah's truth to be able to be as truthful and as authentic as possible. And it was my prayer that whatever was happening and being captured by the camera would come off as authentic and real. And I feel like some faith movies can be really cheesy, and I think there's a place for that too. But I wanted this one, and I think that was the goal of my director as well, Paula L. and Candace Cameron Bray, who were all involved in wanting to make this movie, in trying to make it as real and authentic as possible, and that these characters' struggles are truthful and their emotions are truthful, and that will actually have a big impact on the people that are watching it.
You know, you mentioned prayer and the lead up to how you kind of crafted your character and praying that it makes the right impact on the people who see it. As a believer, how does that factor in? How does your faith factor into the process of making a movie, of going through, you mentioned making notes in the side of your script and trying to figure out how you want to play this character or how you want to navigate this particular subject within a film? How does your faith in God kind of inform?
I get teary thinking about it because I'm like, God is the ultimate coach. You know what I mean? Where I feel like there were so many times I got like downloads of like experiences or words or things that I wanted to include. And when you're prayerful about an experience and being able to give the entire project to the Lord, and especially when you're telling a faith forward story, I felt God's presence on set. I was like, Lord, be present in this moment. We got to shoot an Easter scene on the beach where my character essentially finds faith. And literally, it had been cold almost our whole set. We filmed in January, and we're doing a spring movie. So it was freezing and very cold. And that day we filmed the Easter scene, like the sun came out and it was warm on the beach, and you see it in the shots. Like, I'm literally there praying, surrendering all of my troubles, and like there's this angel glow that comes behind my head, and you're like, God, you showed up. Like, and like, it was so beautiful to be able to bring my own faith into Hannah's journey and make it real. So yeah, prayer was pivotal. I know the writers are also believers, and so there's just been prayer surrounding every part of the process of this project. And I hope that comes across. I hope people sense that there's something different. Not that like everybody was a believer or had to be a believer on set. Like, that's the beauty of it, right? But I feel like there were enough seeds planted along the way, and the intentionality inviting God in on the process, that hopefully makes this movie stand out and makes it special in that way.
You know, I think sometimes Christians or believers, we can be a little bit skeptical. Like, we look at Hollywood and we think, there's nothing good there. Why would you ever want to go and be in that industry and shine the light in that industry? But that's exactly what I think believers are doing. People who do have faith in the Lord, is they are shining a light in an industry. So could you maybe give us just an inside look, like pull back the curtain? What has it been like to be in Hollywood?
The entertainment field is our mission field, is my mission field. That's where I'm called. And I worked in New York on Broadway. Sorry, my dog back here. I worked in New York on Broadway for 15 years. And that also can be a very dark industry. And I just felt like I was called to love the people. You know what I mean? Like, that's where I'm called to love and to share my gifts and try to be a light. And I think if you can wrap your head around that and know that God is with you despite adversity, any adversity that you may be facing or any darkness that you may, you know, feel, as long as you have peace in that time where it's like God's going to equip you with the tools that you need. There's going to be grace over that project or over that, you know, the work that you do in that field. And I actually felt a very strong grace actually end for my time in New York. And I was like, we need to move. We need to get out of here. It feels like the darkness is overcoming the light and onward. And so, like, I think just being discerning and being sensitive, literally project to project. And everybody's line, I think, as a believer, everybody is different about the kind of work that they want to do and what they feel comfortable with and what they want to put out in the world. And I think that's great. We're each called to be lights in our own unique ways. But what I've been encouraged by the last few years is that the Christians in the entertainment industry are beginning to find each other. And it's really, I'm inspired in knowing that I'm not alone, because there have been so many times where I felt really alone in the entertainment industry. And you're right, the kind of darkness or the unredemptive stories that are often being told, and going like, man, how can I alone carry the burden of trying to be a light in the industry? But you realize more and more God is showing me that I'm like, oh no, there's a lot of us. And if we can encourage each other and find projects that we can do together that kind of fill us back up so that we're equipped to be able to go back out, that's what I've been encouraged by the last few years and excited about in the future of the entertainment industry.
All right, Trey, thanks so much for that interview there. All right, that's going to leave us with time on the podcast for one last thing. We are going to take a look at 1 John 2:28. And now, little children, abide in him so that when he appears, we may have confidence and not shrink from him in shame at his coming. And that's a convicting verse for me, Trey, because it just reminds me, if we're just stuck on the things of this world, we're going to be like, what were we doing all this time when we're here when we had been given this gift to follow the Lord while we're here?
For sure. And a good reminder to always be prepared, right? Always be ready for the moment, the hour that the Lord is going to come, because we don't know the time that he's going to come, but we should always be kingdom minded.
Absolutely. All right. Good spot to leave it on today's podcast. As always, get yourself on over to cbnnews.com and faithwire.com for more news from a Christian perspective, Lord willing. That creek don't rise on us. We'll be back here tomorrow with more. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. God bless. See you tomorrow.